Vicki. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Vicki.
If you can't hear my big mouth, I'll try louder, but I don't want to come out of this with a sore throat. Because then they'll think I have Ebola and they'll throw me off the ship. So, I've been in Overeaters Anonymous since April of 1996, so that means I will have 19 years next month. Now, when I first came in, to be honest, this actually worked in my favor. I was the only abstinent member of my group. My second meeting, I was the person with the longest abstinence. So I didn't know it was okay to slip for some reason, so I didn't. And so since April of 1996, I have been abstinent since then. I didn't bring pictures, but if you can imagine, I was 250 pounds now. I'm about 125 now. So if there were two of me smooshed together, that was me. In April of 1996. And so I have maintained about a little over 100 pound weight loss in there since for a little over 18 years. And I'll also say that service is what has kept me in recovery. So I'm going to put a plug in. That's not my topic, but I'm putting a plug in for service. That is the thing that has kept me going in Overeaters Anonymous.
Hear, hear.
I came in Wasilla, Alaska. Trying to think. I couldn't stay on a diet for even 2 or 3 days. When I came in, I was depressed and miserable. I didn't think life was worth living. I thought I was the worst mistake God ever made. I think my defiance and my perfectionism kept me in recovery because my attitude at first was, God, this is not going to work, and to prove to you it won't work, I'm going to do this stinking thing perfectly, and when it doesn't work, it will be your fault. So it worked. One day at a time, I was amazed every morning when I woke up that it worked the day before, and so I just said, okay, if it worked, I'm going to keep doing it until it stops working, and it is still working. I'm married. It's interesting to me that the people I sponsor who are married say it'll be easier to recover if I'm not married. And the people who I sponsor who are not married say it'll be easier to recover if I were married. But I'm married. I have 6 children. I have, to date, 14 grandchildren.
God bless.
So believe me, you can't hear if I am talking, thank you. But anyway, what has... I wanted to feel better. I have heard that when you start coming to OA, what we want is to feel better, and believe me, that happened. Because when I got abstinent, I started feeling anger better. And I started feeling guilt better. And I started feeling fear better. So yes, I started feeling better. But to me, that was the good news. Because, I was going to start with this. Excuse me. February 16th. I'm not going to read today's. That these didn't make us happy was surely due to the fact that we were fat or felt we were. If we could just get to the perfect weight, life would be perfect. And that was how I felt. I thought if I could just get skinny, I would be good. I would be fat. I would be okay. Well, you know, I did get skinny off and on. And believe me, I was a stinking, miserable, skinny lady who probably needed to eat because she was impossible to live with. Getting skinny without a program. I became abstinent after my first meeting and was a normal weight after 6 months. I ignored the emotional and spiritual parts of the program, thinking I might get to them eventually. I lost my abstinence but started abstaining again and knew that recovery had to be more than a diet or a normal weight. None of my problems went away when I was a normal weight. I thought normal weight people had no problems, and I envied them. Now I realize that normal people deal with difficulties rather than pushing them down with food. With my higher power's help, I too can recover.
Very powerful.
Program talks about this being a new way of living. It's not for me a new way of eating. It's not a new way of losing weight. It's a new way of living my life. It's a new way of thinking. I love the phrase acting on life rather than reacting to it. And so from that standpoint, I have to look at the reasons, going back to feeling better, look at putting the axe to the root. What is it? I did not get to 250 pounds because I liked food. You know, lots of thin people like food. That is not what got me fat. What got me fat was that I was using food because there were things I was feeling that I did not want to feel. Things that I thought were just not, it was not, you know, I did not want to feel unhappy. I did not want to feel depressed. I did not want to feel angry. Good girls don't get mad. Thank you very much. So I was eating because I had figured out from the time I was very small that food fixed, you know, when I was 10, I was being abused by my grandfather, my parents divorced, my dad, who was the constant in my life, joined the Navy, my mother, who was I had all this stuff. I think God gave me compulsive overeating so at 10 I wouldn't shatter into 1,000,000,000 pieces, and then he gave me Overeaters Anonymous so I could, to put all the pieces back together. But to me, when I was 10, compulsive overeating was probably a lifesaver. And it got me to where I am today, so I'm very grateful. But I have to have a way of dealing, of not using food, of not looking for something outside of me to fix the inside of me. And so what I'm going to talk about today is how to work the 12 steps around my problems. This program isn't about food. Well, food got me in the door, but for me, it's not about food. So, the 12 steps are about living my life. How do I live my life? And so, the Board of Trustees has actually been working on a document that's very similar to the handout I've given out. This is not the one the trustees have been working on. This will be available. There is going to be something very similar available, but it isn't right now, but it's coming. It's been approved. This actually came from, is based on, not exactly, exact, based on an article in Lifeline in about 2001. So if you want to have back issues, you can probably find something very similar to this. But what I would like for us to do right now is to take just a minute and think about a problem you have right now, a situation you have right now, right this minute, that's going on. For me, I was at a meeting, and I was sharing about this cruise. Excited. Coming here. Gonna meet friends. And, oh, a cruise. Wow. And but as I was sharing, after I shared, someone came on and shared that she felt really, really jealous when I was sharing about the cruise and why didn't you know about the cruise. And I felt bad. I said, maybe I shouldn't have shared about the cruise. So this guilt I had about sharing about the cruise in an OA meeting could be something that really gnaws at my gut. So that would be my situation. Something little. I mean, these little things nibble at my abstinence. So just take a minute right now and think about something that's going on right now that maybe might be even a little teeny thing, but it's kind of swept through your mind because it's just too, or maybe it's a big thing. I don't care.
The handout is available on the oaregion3.org website at the same location as this recording. At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
So we've identified something. I have identified something that if I left it alone, could be the seed for me to eat compulsively. Now, how do the 12 steps, I think I've how do the 12 steps, what do they have to do with eating compulsively? And I think I kind of, what it is this stuff kind of gets in my gut, and I didn't, sometimes I don't even know it's there. But I don't like this twist in my gut, and I will eat. So I'm looking at this, and how am I in what ways am I powerless over this situation, and how is it affecting the unmanageability of my life? Well, I'm powerless over people's reaction to what I say. I'm powerless over how this lady took my talking about the OA cruise. I'm powerless over how I react to her reactions. I'm powerless over whether or not she heard about the cruise. It's not like we haven't been talking about it. It's not like I haven't been sharing about it. You know, in this particular meeting, I know I've talked about coming, and I know one or two other people who've talked about coming. So it's not like it hasn't been out there a little bit. But unmanageability to me. To me, unmanageability, for me, this is my definition, is when I'm trying to control something that I'm powerless over. So, when I start thinking about, well, I should have said this, or I could have said that, and I'm trying to fix something and control things that I can't control. I am powerless over how she took my words. And so, in trying to think about how I could have made it better for her. That's unmanageable. So now take a minute and write down about your problem or situation and where are you powerless, where are we all powerless, and how is it making our life unmanageable? So we'll take a minute and do that.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Are we about ready? Ready to move on? Okay. So, I know what the problem is, and I know that I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. How do you see your higher power assisting? How do I see my higher power in assisting me in being restored to sanity? And do I really believe that my higher power can restore me to sanity? Well, the last part is easy, but that's mostly because I've been working the steps for 19 years. And I know from experience that if I put this in my higher power's lap, that I can be sane and nothing else has to change. I have seen that out there does not have to be different for me to be sane. And step two again, I think for me this goes into having worked the steps before. I know that as I work through the steps, and I look at my character defects later in the steps, and I ask God to remove them, that I am okay. People can react in strange and weird ways to what I say all the time. Even when I say something I really probably shouldn't say, and they react badly, there's a way to go through it, and I can be okay no matter what. So I see my higher power removing my defects of people pleasing and trying to control things and guilt. So I know that when these, you know, what would my life look like if these were gone? I see my higher power restoring me to sanity by removing all this stuff. So, but your answer is probably different than mine. So go ahead and write on this one now. Take a minute.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
How does being willing to turn my will and life over to the care of God assist me in dealing with this, and what would recovery look like? What my will is what I want. And what I want is for everybody to like me. You know, I want to be loved by all and never criticized by anybody. I want to always look good. That's my will. So, you know, I heard an AA speaker say once, he said, my goal when I get up to speak is to be wonderful and perfect and have everybody's life be changed. But you know, God, if your will and the best thing for me, if the best thing is for me to fall flat on my face, so be it. So my will is to always look good and perfect. But you know, I think one of the things to have learned in this program is that perfect people, you know, we don't relate to perfect people really well. So working again, so my will is to look good, and my life is what I do. So my life is doing everything I can to look perfect and not let anybody see my imperfections. So that's my will and that's my life. So, but if I put it in God's hands, I know that I'm an imperfect person and it's okay. And I know that I don't have to try so hard to look perfect because being imperfect is okay. So that's what putting my will in God's hands means. I accept me as a human being. And what would recovery look like? I would sure, if I were in recovery for this thing, I would sure be a lot more at peace when I share at meetings. I wouldn't be trying to censor, you know, is this right, is this wrong, is this right, and this wrong. So that's sort of my thing. You know, what would recovery look like? Well, I could do as Jean said and ask for yogurt. Didn't even think about that. I could pray and look for what's on the breakfast bar that, you know, it doesn't have to be the perfect thing for my plan of eating, but you know, there's something, you know, if God guides me, there's always an answer. So that's what my recovery would look like, putting what I want and what I do in God's hands instead of trying to control everything. So go ahead, right.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
We are doing so good. We're on step four now. Now, when I look at step three and made a decision to turn my... My step three decision to me to put my will and my life in God's hands, to me, is actually the decision to keep working the steps. I cannot put my will and my life in God's hands at step three. I can't do it. If I try it, it's just me trying to control things one more time. So I have to go to step four and look at what is keeping me from putting my will and my life in God's hands. And that to me is what step four is. It's all the stuff, all the character defects inside of me that are keeping me from actually living in God's will. So what character defects have surfaced? To me, mine were people-pleasing and guilt and controlling. And what is my part in this? Again, I think I mentioned my part is thinking that if I say things just perfectly, nobody will ever be offended. You know, if anybody is angry with me, I must have done something wrong. You know. So now we're going to list fears, guilt, resentments. Guilt to me is anger at myself. Fear. Okay, anger to me is when you look at my will. Anger is you did something I did not want you to do. It's self-will. And fear is something is going to happen that I don't want to happen. It's self-will. And guilt is I did something I did not want to do. It's self-will. So whenever I am guilty or angry or resentful or fearful, I am in self-will by definition. That's my thing. So if I need to see all the ways that I'm in self-will before I can fool myself really well to say, oh yes, I go to church every Sunday, I am a good girl, my will and my life is in God's hands, why am I eating compulsively? Yeah. I need to look at all this stuff. So go ahead. Now my guilt at this person for being so offended at my share could really quickly go into angry that she has, you know, she has said, one thing leads to another leads to another. If I don't look at it and I don't put it in God's hands, it can just grow. Amen. And then it goes to, I don't want to go back to that meeting. And then I'm missing meetings.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Ready? Next, step five, am I willing to admit to my higher power, myself, and to another human being the exact nature of the wrongs that contributed to this situation? Admitting to myself isn't so terribly hard. I'm good at beating myself up. Admitting to God isn't so hard because my concept of higher power is God knows everything anyway, so telling him something God already knows is not a big thing anyway. My big difficulty is admitting to another human being because, as I have mentioned before, I don't like other people, especially my sponsor, knowing that I'm not perfect. She knows anyway. But I don't like fessing up to these things to another person and having them see my fallibilities and the way I misfire. So, but am I willing to admit to God, myself, and my higher power, and to another human being, all the stuff that contributed to this? And to me, the nature of my wrongs is more, gosh, I got into people pleasing again at the meeting. Only if you want to.
Okay.
But this is mostly a yes and no question at this point. But after the meeting, no, we're not going to take that much time right now.
So it's just yes.
It's yes or no or yes, no, yes, or no, yes, no, or yes, yes, no. But if you need to talk to someone after this, when we have a break or something, and holler somebody and say, can you be my sponsor for the next 5 minutes or be my listening ear or whatever. Go somewhere and say, okay, God. I heard somebody say once, and this could be, is that saying, okay, God, might be the first honest communication I had with my higher power. I always went to God like a beggar, you know, give me this, give me that, you know, bless I, me, mine. I didn't realize for the longest time how self-centered those bless I, me, mine, you know, heal my children, how self-centered and selfish those prayers were. Instead of, you know, my kid's sick, I'm concerned, but thanks for the kid, and bless all the little sick 5-year-olds. Anyway, are we ready? Am I entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character? And if not, explain why. It's easy for me to say, yeah, I want God to remove all this stuff. But what I have to look at is what's underneath it. Guilt about this person who is offended about my share. No, I don't want to be guilty. I don't want to feel guilty about this. But underneath that is like going back to what I've talked about before. It's the way a way I misfire on a regular basis. I want to look good. So before God can remove the guilt, I have to be willing to put I want to look good on the altar and let him remove that. And if I put my perfectionism on the altar and let God remove my perfectionism, the other will come along for the ride. I don't have to work on the guilt because she didn't like my share. Or feeling like I need to watch my words more carefully. So, am I entirely ready? Before program, I had a big problem with lying. I was the most dishonest, and I was a good kind of church girl, and I didn't know why in the world I would lie all the time. And I would keep asking God to help me be an honest person. Please help me stop lying. And I looked at it, and the thing is, I would lie because I was afraid of other people's reactions. And what I had to put on the altar wasn't my dishonesty, it was my fear of how people would react to what I did or said. And once I put that part of me on the altar, putting the axe to the root, then, you know, the dishonesty came along on its own. You know, it just kind of went away. It's sort of like when I work the steps and God removes these things that lead to the twist in my gut, the compulsive eating I, as the big book says, I no longer need or want to eat compulsively. I don't have to work on my abstinence. It just comes along for the ride when I can keep working the steps around the things in life that come up. So, am I entirely ready to have God remove this? And gosh, I don't want people to be mad at me. God, I've got to put that on the altar. I don't know if I'm willing to let God remove that or not, you know?
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Ready? Let's go. Can you humbly ask God for help in removing your shortcomings? If not, what's standing in your way? Now, the first part is a yes or no, and because I have done it, like I said, for the past 19 years, this was an easy one for me today. And at first, it wasn't so easy. I am losing my voice. trying to talk loud. To me, yes, I want God to remove this. The longer I work these steps, the things I use, I call it going back to the old neighborhood, places where I used to live, the people-pleasing. I used to live in people-pleasing, and trying to figure out what you think I should be so I could pretend to be that so you would like me. And I got really crazy when I was in a group of more than two or three people. But I used to live in that neighborhood. Now I visit it once in a while and realize why I moved out. You know, I will venture into that neighborhood thinking, well, maybe it's changed. Well, it hasn't. And the other really stinky thing about recovery is I have almost no tolerance for it. So when I began to notice this guilt about this person who was reacting poorly to my share, I saw it pretty quickly. Before the meeting was over, I had let it go. And that was something that before I came into OA would have eaten at me for weeks and weeks and weeks. So am I willing to humbly ask God to remove these things?
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Are we ready? All right. We're doing so good. We're at step 8 already. Make a list of persons who are being harmed, and don't forget yourself. How have they been harmed, and are you willing to make amends? Well, in my case, I think the person who was harmed the most was me. Me going into that neighborhood and feeling that twist in my gut and putting myself at risk for spiraling, you know, for entering the neighborhood again. Now, as I progress in recovery, I'm in that neighborhood less and less, and sometimes I don't even go there to begin with. But the person who was harmed mostly in this was me. And am I willing to make amends? And for me, in this case, the amends is to continue working these steps, to continue looking at this as something that I'm still powerless over. I have weeds in my garden. I will pull them up, try to get the root, but you know what? That little bit of root is still there, and it still pops up. So my continuing amends is to keep weeding my garden, to keep watching for these things that pop up. A mental analogy I have is a tree growing crooked. And we have an apple tree, and it was growing crooked. And when my husband went out when it was little and pulled it straight, but if he hadn't, it would have grown crooked. And I was a little apple tree. When I was little, I grew crooked. And I wasn't staked up straight. And it can be straightened up, but it may always be just a little bit crooked. But the good thing about it is that if it's a little bit crooked, the apples on this side are easier to pick. But, you know, I don't know. God may completely remove it, and I may hang on to bits and pieces for the rest of my life. But my amends is to keep looking for it and be aware of it and be aware that this is how I can misfire on a regular basis.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Step 9, what amends are necessary? How and when will you make them? And my answer to that would be going back to the step eight question. The amends to myself are to keep working my steps and to keep watching for these things. And, you know, and I will continue. This is an ongoing thing for me in my life because it is a way I misfire on a regular basis, and I know this about me. It's an ongoing living amends, and I think amends, to me, especially for people pleasers like me, most of the time, amends are not I'm sorry. Amends are just acting different. Are being different. And that's actually harder than the I'm sorry. Yes. Talk loud.
When you said acting different, the problem that I'm thinking of is that I can't change that. Like, I want to know how I act different if I can't act different. How do I make that amends to myself? I can't make that amends to myself.
You're right. And I meant to touch on that, and I differed, and I didn't. I can't act different on my own. And it goes back to something I said before. When I work on the character defects, God removes the defects, and therefore I act different. So God removed my character defect of being afraid of how people would react to me. And when he removed that, the dishonesty went away and I acted different. But I didn't have to work on dishonesty. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. That's how acting different comes in. It keeps going back to the steps and walking through the steps and whatever comes up. And knowing that if I put the axe to the root, the food fixes itself, the actions fix themselves. And my insides, I am happy and at peace because, God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I couldn't make myself okay on the inside.
So is your work then just, where does your surrender come in there?
Being aware and I'm powerless. That's I'm powerless. Can God help me? Can God restore me to sanity? Am I willing to let him? There may be things that I'm not willing to put on the altar. I just want this thing so bad. I'm not willing to trust God with it. If I don't have a job and I really need a job and I think I've got to have a job, I'm not willing to put the idea that maybe I won't get a job on the altar. The surrender is, I keep going to meetings and I keep sharing. And an example from my past is I was at a meeting once. I attended a meeting once where there were a couple of people, and one of them technically was she was bipolar, and nobody knew it at the time, including her. But almost every meeting she'd get angry at me and either yell at me. At one point she threw the Seventh Tradition basket at me. And I didn't, and I told my sponsor maybe I should stop going, and she said, no, you're her safe target, and you've got to recover, keep going. So, but that was my surrender, is that, I go to this meeting and I get yelled at, and I can't fix her. I could not make her stop. As knowing what my higher power wanted me to do, and doing it, and surrendering the outcome to my higher power. And what happened is then she quit coming to meetings for maybe a month and a half, 2 months. Came back and said, I figured out I was bipolar. And then she never yelled at me again. But that was her stuff. I couldn't fix bipolar. And someone needed to go to the meeting, and recovery needed to be shared at that meeting. And I was willing to share it. So that was the surrender, is doing what I knew God wanted me to do and leaving the outcome in his hands. So are we at step 10?
Yes.
Review the above steps to make sure nothing has been overlooked, and what specific actions can you take today? This whole thing is sort of a step 10 to me, but at this point, it's inviting me to go back over it, review the thing. Is there anything else going on related to this that I might want to look at and work through it again. But to make sure everything is really, really clean. But just to kind of, okay, did I really do this well? Did I really do a thorough job of it? Because I don't want to eat over this person. I don't want to give this person in the meeting who is so offended enough power that I walk around with this knot in my gut, afraid to share in meetings, and maybe eating compulsively. I don't want her to have that much power in my life. So what is really going on? How can I really put the axe to the root of this thing and see what's really going on? Not my first fifth step, but I think probably maybe a second or third one. I was talking with my sponsor, and she said, "Vicki, did you know every one of your resentments is rooted in nobody likes me?" And that was the first time I had noticed. And she was right. Every resentment I had in my life had its root that people don't like me. And so that was the root. That's where I had to put the axe. That's where I really have to work my program even today, is walking into a room and feeling like nobody here likes me. And I still sort of do it, but at this point, it's like, oh, there it is again, and I ask God to remove it and keep going. But there was a time when it would just really paralyze me. When I came into OA, believe it or not, I couldn't put two sentences together, and I could barely say, "I'm Vicki, I'm a compulsive." I couldn't even do that. I would have to put my head down on the table, fold my arms, and I couldn't even get out, "I'm Vicki, and I'm a compulsive overeater." Now you can't shut me up. Are we ready to go to 11? Review the above step. Take a moment for prayer and meditation, asking for knowledge of God's will for you and what did you discover. So we are going to take a minute and just meditate on this. And then write on what you figured out. And write on, ask God what God's will is for you in this situation. And write what you discovered about it.
At this point, pause the recording until you're ready to continue with the instructions.
Can we come back together now? And then moving on to step 12, and first question, how can your understanding and spiritual guidance assist you in dealing with this problem? And what spiritual awakenings and new insights have you gained as the result of working these steps on this problem? The biggest insight I gained was that God has brought me a long way from where I was 19 years ago. God has brought, from living in the guilt and the fear all the time, so paralyzed that I couldn't talk to people, to someone who could listen to the meeting, hear myself criticized just a little bit, and not go overboard about it, to see it and ask for God's help, and then to let it go within just a few minutes. And that God has truly done for me what I could never have done for myself through working these 12 steps. And I'm truly, truly grateful for this program, for these steps. When I was fairly new in recovery, I went to the mall, and they were piping the cinnamon smell off of the mall like they do. And, I was probably abstinent 6 weeks, 2 months, really new. And I got really angry. I said, "God, why me? Why can they all eat this stuff and I can't?" And just really angry, and I did my business, and I left, and I got in my car, and I'm just steaming mad. Before I got to the first traffic light, I said, "God, why me? Why did you give me this program? And so many other people don't have it and really need it. And I'm just grateful for the why me? Why am I so lucky? How did I get here? I have a life today that I never dreamed I could have, that is better than I ever dreamed. I'm here!" So now, we have about 20, 25 minutes for sharing. So if you'd like to think about share about what you wrote, the microphone is, if you stand where you are, it's a pretty good mic, but you need to stand and really, really speak. speak out, or you can kind of come up here where the mic is, either one.